Hi, I'm Mark Olson, and this is The Real, a podcast where culture and entertainment meet. I write about movies here at The Times, and a frequent topic of conversation among my colleagues on the entertainment staff is how tough it is for any of us to just keep up with the relentless wave of content between movies and TV. So this show is about the stuff that we're watching and how we watch it. This has been one of the most unusual award seasons on record, both for everything happening behind the scenes with the Academy and the show itself, as well as the varied and unpredictable winners. So for our final conversation before the Oscars ceremony, I was joined by Times Award specialist Glenn Whipp, cultural commentator Mary McNamara, and film critic Justin Chang to try to make sense of some of what's going on and what we all might expect from this year's ceremony. Let's listen in. And this is our last episode before the Oscars ceremony itself. And so to sort of a last call for Oscars, I'm joined today by some of my colleagues.
I'm Mary McNamara.
I'm Glenn Whipp.
And I'm Justin Chang.
And now this year in particular has seemed particularly kind of topsy-turvy, both for the sort of awards that are being given, the movies that are in contention, the sort of typical like Oscar season talk. But this year it seems like we also have been talking about the show itself, the Academy, the makeup of how, a lot more behind the scenes stuff than we are normally talking about. Mary, how do you feel about the fact that the show itself has become such a focal point of conversation leading up to the awards?
Well, I think the show itself has been a focal point for like the last 5 years for a variety of reasons. Oscar So White being one of them, gender parity being another with Me Too, things like that. Unfortunately, this year, it's all been all about the logistics of the show rather than like any kind of larger social message. The larger social message that's there represented by a lot of the films that have been nominated has been kind of muffled by the fact that, you know, we're going to have a popular Oscar. No, we're not. We're going to Kevin Hart's hosting. No, he isn't. We're going to give out these awards during the commercials. No, we're not. They're attempting to make some changes to the show, which I applaud as someone who has watched the show for like, you know, 25 years and written about it in myriad ways. The way they've done it, like you do kind of, you wonder, like, did they talk to the members? Have they met the members? Because it's kind of like they just sort of slide it out as a fait accompli and then everybody loses their minds. And that's never a great way to do it.
Glenn, what are your impressions of some of the attempted changes with the show?
It's exhausting. It's exhausting covering the Academy because it's like a cycle of stories. You write, okay, the Academy is moving awards off the ceremony to commercial breaks. Then you write a second story, the outrage over what the Academy is doing. And then you have to write a third story. The Academy is backtracking now and has changed their mind because of the outrage. It's just like this cycle, and it's happened 3 times now. And I really agree with what she said. It's like now we've forgotten the movie's nominated. And we're not talking about Black Panther or Black Klansman or Roma. We're talking about just how tenured this Academy is to its membership, which just baffles me because they have 54 governors sitting on the board making these decisions. And you would think that, and a lot of them are just great industry professionals, really respected filmmakers. Were they in the room when these decisions were made? Didn't they raise objections? It's just mystifying, and I'd love to delve into it more, but it's a really hard topic because people don't want to talk about it.
And Justin, to me, it's been really interesting that as all these changes and issues have come up with the show and with the Academy, it has in some ways forced the kind of existential question of like, what do we want from the Oscars? Like, what do we want this show to be giving us? And how do you feel about that? What's your perspective on like what it is that whether we agree with the Academy or not, but what is the thing that they're maybe trying to get at with the show?
I tend to align myself with a piece that Kyle Buchanan actually wrote a while back when he was still at Vulture. Now, of course, he's the carpetbagger at the New York Times, saying the Oscars should always be long. Like, it doesn't matter about the ratings, doesn't care about, you know, the fact that it's perceived as too long or tedious, that people who really do watch the Oscars year after year, no matter how much they aggravate us and infuriate us, we still cherish them, you know, kind of, and it's kind of shame on us for caring so much. You know, the Oscars drive me crazy. I still love watching it, and the length of it has never really bothered me. I think that I could do without the montages. I could do without some of the canned banter, as could most of us, I think. But there did seem to be something sacrosanct about the awards, the categories that are presented on the air. I mean, you know, they did shunt off the Governor's Awards. I can't remember how long ago that was, where they do kind of a repackaged summary of that, what is now a separate ceremony. And that, you know, caused a little bit of outrage at the time. And we've all just kind of accepted it now. Would we have done that if they had succeeded in kicking these four categories off and they just stuck to their guns? Maybe not. I'm still glad that they reversed themselves.
But Mary, you wrote a really interesting piece recently that was about the fact that you like the idea that the Oscars are about making a statement, and that part of what that statement is almost like a temperature reading of like where we are as a culture, what we want from our entertainment. What to you is the statement that you want from the Academy?
So the piece that I wrote was that it's kind of striking to me that during the last few years, we've been alarmed about the ratings drops, is when the Academy and the Oscars have become more influential in the cultural conversation than they ever were before. But in the last few years, the movies have become a lightning rod for diversity, for issues of sexual harassment, obviously the Me Too movement, for parity, for now we've got with Roma, we're dealing with international and class issues, and we're having those conversations. And it's really, you know, kind of striking to me because it's like, you know, not only are the Oscar ratings falling, but the argument could be made that film itself is not as influential as it once was compared to television, except for at this time of year or when the Oscars allow everybody to like look at this very limited group of movies and talk about bigger issues. And I think that that is more valuable to the culture.
Glenn, what is the statement that you sort of like from the Academy? What do you want the show to kind of be about?
I don't have a problem with a longer Oscars, but the decisions they make about what to include and what not to include. This year, I mean, they just tweeted out that Queen plus Adam Lambert is going to be performing at the Oscars. I have a feeling that that's going to be maybe the way the show opens. I don't know. I don't understand that. I mean, I get it. There's a tangential connection with Queen plus Adam Lambert and the movie Bohemian Rhapsody. But in a year where you have Lady Gaga and a song that's just been such a ubiquitous earworm in our culture, how do you not open the show with Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper singing Shallow? I mean, I know maybe it's showing favoritism to one of the nominees, but that song's just like...
But it would be showing favoritism to a nominee that is a good film rather than a terrible film.
How do you not open the show with that song?
Well, I think that the logic is that if you know that there is an audience tuning in for that performance, do you give it to them right away or do you make them wait an hour?
No, I give it to them right away. Let's open the show with a bang.
You know, the openers that work to me are about celebrating the films that are nominated. You know, it's like the Billy Crystal openers. It's like you need to figure out a way to show the breadth of the film that are being nominated. If we're talking about just the telecast, and I don't know how much time they were going to save by giving these awards during the commercials, but the reaction to it, I honestly thought that they had taken away the Oscars. Like they were not going to be giving out Oscars. I think if you're going to celebrate the movies, then you should celebrate the movies. I like the montages. What I don't like is meeting Price Waterhouse. Like, they could get rid of that. I don't want to hear from the Academy president. It's like, I don't want any of that. It's just like, show me the movies. I want more of that. Mm-hmm. Like, I want the scenes. I want, you know,
the clips. Which they've taken away for years now.
You know, 1 year they did, I thought, a really good job where they like sort of explained what some of the non-acting categories were, the below the line. And to me, that was like one of the best Oscars because it was like, here's what these people do. And like they had like little sets. It was just very well done. And, you know, it's like, if you're going to argue, as many people did when I wrote a piece suggesting that losing four categories was not the end of the world, that the Oscars is about learning about how films are made, then I would like to see that. I would like to have a conversation about what does a film editor do? What is,
Absolutely.
You know, what is the difference between sound mixing and sound editing? Explain it to me in... You know, show me a little clip or something.
I could not agree more. I mean, it's true the Oscars are not about learning that, but it was a nice side effect in a way. And I remember growing up watching the Oscars because they would do that every few years, I think. They'd have these little explainers, and some of them were actually very kind of visually inventive in the way they depicted. I remember the screenplay where they show lines, you know, it was cool. And for young people watching the Oscars, there's something really kind of inspiring about that. That was like my film school at 11 years old, you know, my little taste of film school. So I'm sort of attached to things that may not really make for great, riveting television, but that show an essential decency and respect for the crafts, you know, I mean.
But see, I disagree. I think if you, you could package what a cinematographer does, what an editor does, in a way that would be very good television. Because, like, I think we see the fondness for behind-the-scenes commentary is boundless. If it's fun and revelatory, and I think that that would be a great way to do it. So we should write the Oscars next year.
I mean, I agree. And just to circle back to Shallow, my current podcast obsession, it's not going to be performed in its entirety. From what I understand, the five original song nominees are going to be performed as sort of a medley. So you'll get 90 seconds somehow of Shallow and the other four nominees, but you'll have probably 10 minutes of Queen plus Adam Lambert. And I keep just saying plus Adam Lambert because it's not Queen.
But now, is that issue of they think they have this big get, and that obviously Bohemian Rhapsody, say what you will about the film, has been an international box office smash. And so I think the producers of the show are thinking, oh, this is a very current, popular thing we can sort of like shoehorn into the show. And they also have this new idea of they're going to have people from sort of outside of the movie business being presenters or making these sort of like presentations. I know they've said that Serena Williams is going to be speaking about A Star is Born and what that means to her. Or they recently announced that Grammy winner Kacey Musgraves is, I think, going to be a presenter. Do the producers of the Oscars hate Hollywood? Like, do they have some anxiety about what Hollywood represents or the idea that they have to somehow go outside their own sort of talent pool in creating the show? Like, what do you think, Glenn? What are the producers anxious about?
I will say I don't have a problem with Serena Williams or Kacey Musgraves showing up and talking about a meaningful, because again, I think it almost ties in a bit with what Justin's saying. You're treating these movies with respect. You're allowing somebody else's viewpoint outside the industry to show how these films affected their lives. I think that's potentially a good thing. Anything that puts the focus on the films and appreciating them is a good thing. I'd rather hear Serena Williams talk about A Star is Born for a couple of minutes than to see some kind of goofy montage about the magic of movies.
Although when Chris Rock went to the...
That was funny.
The White Chicks, that was really brilliant.
And illuminating, that is true.
Yes. But I think, you know, they're trying to get younger viewers. I mean, that's what they're trying to do. And they're trying to get more viewers. And they're trying to get the idea of an Oscar party established among a younger audience, because the audience skews old for the telecast, because the young people don't watch television the way old people like me watch television, and they don't have the same tradition of like, let's all get together and have an Oscar party. But they might if they know that they're going to be getting, you know, an added bonus of seeing Serena Williams talk about something they haven't seen Serena Williams talk about. And I mean, and that's the other thing. It's like, you know, being able to see movie stars used to be a big deal. That used to be a big draw of the Oscars. It's like you get to see these people that you haven't seen before. You get to hear them on the red carpet. We see them all the time. There's a red carpet every 15 minutes. It's like we hear from them all the time.
We see them in our feeds.
Like, exactly. Yeah. It's like, you know, hearing from Jennifer Lawrence or hearing from George Clooney or hearing from, it is not a big deal anymore. So you do have to sort of go, but hearing Serena Williams talk about A Star is Born, okay. Or, you know, if they could get LeBron James, man, that would be like a deal. It's like, and I would be interested to hear him talk about the power of movies. And I think that's a really good idea, because the power of movies is not limited to the people who make movies. It's supposed to be about the people who watch the movies. So I think it would be fun to go even further afield and talk to people about what is your favorite movie this year and why.
Maybe to get away from talking about like the show a little bit and into talking about the movies, Glenn, talk a little bit about the fact that like Rami Malek has at this point seems like the presumed frontrunner for Best Actor, zooming past people like Christian Bale or Bradley Cooper that a couple of months ago certainly seemed more like the presumed frontrunners. Like with that category in particular, what happened? What happened to Christian Bale and Bradley Cooper, and how did we end up with Rami Malek as Freddie Mercury, your Best Actor winner?
I mean, the simple answer is people love Bohemian Rhapsody. It's made $840 million worldwide. I've profiled a couple. It'll be running in Sunday Calendar, who have seen it 24 times in movie theater. I've heard from readers who have seen it in the teens. I mean, people could win best editing. How about that? It could win best sound mixing over A Star Is Born. And Rami Malek's been everywhere. He's run a campaign where Bradley Cooper has kind of set himself apart. The thing with Bradley Cooper is that he co-wrote, he produced, he directed, and stars in this film. He has composed songs for this movie. But I mean, I guess the focus that he was placing on his work in the movie was as a director. And perhaps if he had talked about his acting a little bit more, and which I feel like it's a much better performance than Rami Malek in Bohemian Rhapsody, perhaps we'd be talking about Bradley Cooper winning something, which I'm not going to say sadly, but Bradley Cooper has not won anything this award season, really. A couple of Grammys. But yeah.
I think you're seeing a collision of a couple things, including the Academy's continued insistence that Best Actor has to go to someone playing a real-life person. It's just that's what they're most impressed by. It creates this immediate standard of like, oh, how closely does this performance match up with the real-life person that I know? And our opinions on how well or not well Rami Malek does that in Bohemian Rhapsody can vary, but for a lot of people, very impressed, whereas something that Bradley Cooper does, it's in a very much more soulful and kind of subdued performance, even though that character, of course, is a classic character that's been played in, you know, three times or four times before. And I think there's an underdog quality to Bohemian Rhapsody. And maybe, you know, implicating myself, not that anyone's really paying attention to what the critics say, but the fact that we came down on that with a weight of like 1,000 sledgehammers, and then people enjoy it. It's like, hey, what are people so down about? And it becomes this cause celeb in a way that A Star Is Born, which was set up as the front runner from the beginning. And you have Bradley Cooper, who I've always been a fan of, but who is clearly a really talented guy, who's also a little, I wouldn't say uncomfortable with the spotlight, but a little aloof and serious-minded. It's like, it's in a way, people don't respect that kind of serious-mindedness.
But now I also want to be sure that we talk about the Best Actress category, because this is another one I find really interesting, and in that there were sort of these early conversations around, obviously, Lady Gaga. Then Olivia Colman sort of got a lot of attention for a while. There was all the conversation about like lead versus supporting with regards to The Favorite and which of the three actresses should go in which category. And then there was always this like low rumble, like Glenn Close for The Wife, which was a movie that premiered, of course, at the Toronto Film Festival in 2017. So like a full sort of cycle ago. And it came out over the summer. It didn't make a ton of money, but it did okay. And just, it was one of those things where like this, Mary, the sort of like the Oscar prognostication season and like the way in which people, you know, make these early lists before they've even seen all the movies. And a lot of times Glenn Close, sometimes she'd be in the top five, sometimes she'd be in sort of like a second five or something. For you, the way in which like the Glenn Close train has like got to running, how do you feel about that? Like the way in which it's like, it went from being this sort of like, maybe like, well, maybe respectful acknowledgement to seeming like a thing that's actually happening.
So for me, Glenn Close, you know, I was not paying that much attention to all the various movies that were coming out of festivals. I got a screener for The Wife and I watched it because it's Glenn Close and Jonathan Pryce. And when I watched it, I went, well, she's going to win the Oscar. And I'm surprised that the movie itself didn't get a little bit more. I mean, it was not a perfect movie in my mind, but Jonathan Pryce was also very good in it. But I found her performance absolutely astonishing. It was like she had one big moment towards the end, and that to me was like the least important moment of the whole performance. Just, you know, in a way that very few American actors can do, just the power in the close-up and the power in the stillness and the power in just the little flicker of the eyelash or the little sidelong glance. And she is the master. And that's why she hasn't won before now, because her performances are so freaking understated. You know, she makes it look easy. Albert Nobbs was just an incredible movie, and that she didn't win for that, it was ridiculous. But it was never a question in my mind that she was going to be a front runner. At the end of the day, you can't predict who's going to win because it's crazy people voting on it and voting in a crazy way, you know, which is like.
Yeah, I just want to piggyback on what Mary said. You know, it's funny. It's a very internal performance, which is impressive. that Glenn Close gives, but it also takes something that feels very subtextual and puts it right on the surface, you know, and the whole thing of this movie is just, it's something, you know, that very quiet, understated gravity that she has, but it's in these full close-ups, and so it becomes the movie. And Best Actress was just ridiculous this year. So I will not begrudge Glenn Close, even though her performance, I think, is really great. And it's maybe my fourth or fifth favorite of this bunch. I would vote for Olivia Colman, who is just magnificent in The Favorite. And very, very close behind her, I think, is Melissa McCarthy in Can You Forgive Me?
Yeah, I feel bad. Yeah, Melissa McCarthy was really good. So, and she's good. Like, nobody's talking about that.
I know.
And it's terrible. I love that performance, actually.
You know, and Olivia Colman has gotten to speak a few times, like she won the BAFTA and gave a hilarious speech. And she was very good at the Globes, too, when she won for Best Actress in a Comedy. But she was, you know, of course, everyone was overshadowed by Glenn Close's speech. I like when everyone gets a chance to win something, which doesn't always happen. But I think if Richard E. Grant had just gotten, you know, he won a lot of critics awards. But if he had just gotten a chance to win at a televised ceremony, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think he did. I think the momentum of the race would shift. Sometimes it's like everyone just needs their moment to get out there and see what a great speech. And Glenn Close, of course, just knocked it out of the park at the Globes. And so the Globes, we say, are not always predictive, but I think they can be when the speeches are good and the speeches are memorable.
Well, Glenn, that brings up a great point, which is that sort of the Guild Awards that are sort of frequently considered, you know, predictors for what's going to be winning at the Oscars, they have given awards to a different movie at each guild, which really is an extreme rarity. And so on the one hand, I feel like we in sort of like the Oscar media complex, we get upset when it gets like boring and feels like this death march of inevitability towards what's going to happen at the Oscars. But then this year, it's kind of crazy making because we have less of an idea than almost ever before, because all of our typical, you know, signposts and prognosticator type tricks like aren't really pointing towards anything. Everything's pointing in a different direction. How do you feel about what those Guild Awards this year have meant, and maybe what are you looking for or thinking about for what might win Best Picture? Does it feel really open to you?
It does feel open, because every one of the movies that you think could win Best Picture also has kind of something, a good reason why it won't win Best Picture. You have Roma, that won the Director's Guild Award for Alfonso Cuarón, its director. It's also nominated for Foreign Language Feature. You have Green Book, which won the Producers Guild Award. And the Producers Guild votes with the same strange preferential ballot that the Academy votes with. So they're ranking the movies. That's often the most accurate indicator of what movie is going to win Best Picture. And I've just written so much this year that Green Book just doesn't feel like the kind of movie that this new Academy, with so many added members in the last few years, doesn't feel like the kind of movie that would win Best Picture in 2019. But yeah, I don't see Green Book winning. But then again, the older Academy members really like it and feel like its message of friendship and racial tolerance and overcoming prejudice is a very positive message. They don't see any drawbacks in that. Then you have Black Panther, which won the Screen Actors Guild Ensemble Award. But it wasn't nominated for director, it wasn't nominated for screenplay, it wasn't nominated for any acting, it wasn't nominated for editing. You have to go back to like 1930 for a movie that didn't have any of those other nominations winning Best Picture.
And then the Writers Guild went completely off the map with Eighth Grade,
rogue.
Not even an Oscar nominee, and absolutely the best choice, I think.
I know.
So happy with that. And for original screenplay, and the adapted screenplay went to Can You Ever Forgive Me, which was also a great choice. And that movie, of course, is up for one. So I think the wide openness is exciting. I like that it's not very predictable. Maybe there's this dilution. There's so many good movies and a few terrible ones duking it out. And so things seem to sort of cancel each other out, and the Academy doesn't even have a grip on the fact that they have a movie as just terrific as Black Panther, which I'm rooting for very much as Mary is and as Kenny is and as a lot of people are. That one would just resets things, shatters a lot of molds. So would a win for Roma, which I'm not as crazy about, which I think would absolutely be a really classy, wonderful choice, because it is about time that a foreign language film wins Best Picture. It's about time that an art film, I use that term loosely, I mean, you know, Moonlight, certain things could be defended as an art film, but it seems like there's these great choices with Black Panther and Black Klansman and Roma, where it would be this great step forward. And a great Best Picture doesn't always have to be a step forward, but here in this case, I think you have ones that could be. And then Green Book and Bohemian Rhapsody both feel so regressive to me.
And A Star Is Born.
And to me, A Star Is Born is kind of right in the middle of those of those two extremes, and is, you know, and is certainly a better movie than the other two. But there's something very regressive, I think, about giving it to a movie that says that a racial reconciliation narrative about a white man and a black man, oh, how great is that? I mean, we should be beyond that by now. A movie that that treats the sexuality of Freddie Mercury in this with this kid gloves very tame way, and then does some really gross things in terms of blaming him for, you know, we should be beyond that by now. And some people think like, oh, that's enough. That's all the gay sexuality I want to see in my movie. And that's just one part of why I think that movie is terrible. So I think that you're seeing this really radical, actually, battle between regression and progress.
Mary, do you agree with that? I mean, I think it's easy to set up these dynamics of Roma versus Green Book or Black Panther versus Bohemian Rhapsody. And it does feel as if there is whatever this new version of the Academy is versus the more traditional version of the Academy. It does seem like there's some sort of internal conflict happening there. And do you think that it's kind of playing itself out in our Oscar choices this year?
To me, I can't wait for the Oscars. Like, I'm looking forward to this Oscars in a way that I have not looked forward to the Oscars in many years, because I have no idea who's going to win, because I have no idea what the show is going to look like. And again, it comes back to, like, everybody complains about the fact that, like, last year we all knew who was going to win because they'd won everywhere else. In terms of, like, as watching this happen, it was not terribly exciting because we knew that's what was going to happen. And this year, I have no idea. And no matter what, people are going to be outraged and there are going to be really great conversations. And so I think the Best Picture list is the most diverse Best Picture list I've ever seen since I've been covering the Oscars, which is like 20 years or whatever. And not just because of Black Panther and Black Klansman and because we have The Favorite with three women and all of that. There are small films and huge films and films that the critics are like, what? And the public is like, yes. And it's like, that was the reason that they doubled the number of nominees, to have a list exactly like this.
And now, as a way to sort of like point towards wrapping up this conversation, I want to hear from each of you kind of like, not so much a prediction, but like the thing that would really make your heart sing if it happened at the Oscars. Like, for myself, I kind of have this like fantasy scenario whereby Spike Lee wins Best Director, which means that in adapted screenplay, which he's sort of maybe more of a favorite to win. So if he wins Best Director, then that means that Nicole Hofstetter and Jeff Witte for Can You Ever Forgive Me could win an Oscar for in adapted screenplay. Glenn, what for you would be like the win that would maybe make you happiest?
At this point, I just want the things that I'm predicting to win. I'm kind of like stopped caring.
You want your perfect record.
I want to go 24 out of 24 categories. It's never happened. I've gotten like 22.
This year, that will be insane.
It would be.
I think it would be great if like everybody won something. Like, yes. And I want the show to succeed. You know, I want it to be lively and different. And I want people to see that different doesn't have to be this scary, that it can be better. So that's what I would like. I mean, I want Glenn Close to win. I think I've made that pretty clear. But there is a lot of love to spread and there are a lot of deserving movies.
I think I've said the two already that I would make me most happy. It would be Black Panther for Best Picture. And it's funny, I say that because I think that movie is curiously underrated. And I think that despite how terrible an idea the popular film Oscar was for me, to me, I do think that this year, this popular movie should win. And I do want to say one more thing. I would be really happy if by some miracle, Bradley Cooper does win Best Actor. Partly because, yes, I feel sorry for him. But mainly because you do feel sometimes when, you know, this is the problem with crowning a frontrunner too early. Sometimes that frontrunner is a good movie and sometimes it's not a good movie. But in this case, the deflation of A Star Is Born, I do think, is undeserved in certain categories and in certain respects. I do think he gives the best performance in that very weak Best Actor field.
So with that, maybe we'll go ahead and wrap up this conversation about the Oscars. Mary, can you tell people where they can find your work online? Where are you on Twitter there?
Oh, at MaryMacTV.
Glenn?
At Glenn Whip.
At Justin C. Chang.
And I, of course, am at IndieFocus. And so for LA Times Studios and The Real, I'm Mark Olson. Thanks for listening.